Welcome back. Time for the second half of the KE report. We were going to go away from Pakistan directly into some of the domestic situations going on in the country right now. But Jimmy has some things he wants to say about the international situation before we do that, as does Mr. Shire. Jimmy, let's start with you, bud.
Well, okay, I wanted to give a kind of a metaphor for what happened here, and but I would like to hear Rob's question first. Maybe I can answer it in this response. So, Rob, you had a question for me. What was the question?
Well, historically, we've tried to help Afghanis to battle the Taliban and give them the power to defend themselves, and it was often very difficult to train these people to do it, and also their willingness to stick to it. I mean, a lot of the Afghanis switched their allegiances, you know, depending on which way the wind is blowing, and just go ahead and join the other side, depending on what their situation is. What do you have to say about how difficult it is to sway the majority in Afghanistan?
So, yeah, and this, absolutely, I'm glad I asked you to ask the question, because this is exactly what I wanted to talk about. So it is difficult. And the problem in Afghanistan is you have this long history of whoever has the power, and the power is based on your region, your tribe, your local, you know, village leadership, and who basically who has the gun. If you don't have trust and faith, just think about an American, and we've got this big debate going on defunding the police. If you don't think anybody's going to come and help you when you dial 911, then what are you going to do? You're going to have to take responsibility for yourself, or you're going to have to succumb to the pressures of whoever's putting pressure on you. In Afghanistan, there's never been somebody that you could call 911 that had a blanket set of rules and responsibilities, a constitution or a set of laws that supported you. It was run by power, who had the most power. So it's very difficult for these villages and for the volunteers to build national consensus based on the rule of law. And so what you see is the Taliban pressuring in the rural areas with the gun, and there was no one there to go and help. Now, what we had done by spending a rather, incredible amount of money was try to develop a capacity and a national consensus with people that their rights were important to them, the basic foundations for, you know, for democracy, that you should have a choice, that someone shouldn't just tell you how to think or believe with a gun at your head. And what that meant was that we were not making the decisions, but democracy by its very nature is a choice. You can't enforce, you can't force democracy on somebody. It has to be a choice. As people wanted more democracy there, they were still in that balance. And this is what I'm going to just – I'll simplify and end here in a second. I look at it like the Seattle Seahawks for people here in the Pacific Northwest or any American football team. You have a new team. You've got players that are committed to try and do something, but really not sure what the rules are. But you got a really sophisticated West Coast offense. You've got a great coach. You got a great quarterback. But you don't really know what's happening. And halfway through the game, the quarterback walks off the field. And then you look over at the bench, and there's no coaching. And then there's no football because you take away the football and the logistics. That's what happened in Afghanistan. What the hell? What else could they have done? They did not have the backstop. They had no one to help and call 911. And we, with a very small force, were able to keep that going for a while, and walking out, undermining all that confidence and faith, left those people with no other option. And that's my position on it. And I think we could have done it. I think we could continue to defend with a very small force. We would have been in combat operations. I think we could have just had basically a security assistance program like we've done over decades and generations in other nations that would have just helped advise and assist, and we could have helped target it against the international global terrorists and kept the Taliban at bay and strengthened them over. But it would have taken a long time. It would have taken a long time.
That answered the question for you, Robbie.
It does. My next question is, how are we going to fix this?
You know, It is the debacle, the fear by this administration. I mean, and they've said it publicly. They just don't want to get into a firefight in Kabul. We've been fighting there for 20 years. In order to get Americans out, in order to help people and, you know, down the road and not face another complete retribution, they'd have to completely flip their policy, this administration. I don't think that they're going to do that. So for what I see is, I mean, unfortunately, the reality is we're going to see a lot more pressure in other places in the world because taking advantage of the fear this, you know, the fear this administration has of getting into conflict. And I think we're going to face some very difficult national positions for a while. And I obviously think that this is going to continue to bleed in Afghanistan. The administration can't run from it because you still have all these people there and it's going to continue to hurt them. It may actually bring down this administration because of the lack of decision-making, the public statements they made just weeks before that are just so embarrassingly inaccurate, and then, of course, the attempts to blame others, which are really unfortunate, and I think it's going to continue to bleed on them. So I don't know how the solution, if it were up to me, we would have never gotten to this point, but I would have also reestablished very rapidly the statement that we are going to protect Americans. I would have put a large force in there to do evacuations. I would be willing to fight if necessary to get our Americans out if we really are going to pull out. And then we move out. I would not recognize the Taliban in the future. They came to power with the barrel of a gun. They're intimidating and threatening people. They will lie. They will continue to do it. They've been fighting for now since the mid 90s. And they're not going to change their ways.
You guys, Miguel wants to throw one thing in here that I think is really, really important. The Middle East is a quagmire. It's a no-win situation that started back way before the 1949 when Truman recognized Israel as an independent country. It started back in the teens and the 20s when France, America, and England basically decided it was time, you know, the Balfour Declaration, they decided it was time to give Israel a homeland. That is a very, very important thing you have to remember. There were a lot of people in the Middle East at that time that are now considered to be terrorists, et cetera, that felt that their land was being stolen from them. I've read a lot of books by Israeli authors who kind of question that particular issue, and I want to say this. You know, if the tenets of, for example, the New Testament were followed, which is the specifically the proclamation of the kingdom, love yourself, love your God, love your fellow man, I think we'd have a much better situation in the Middle East right now. The Israelis, God bless them, have gotten to the point where if they have the technology, in my opinion, to destroy the entire terrorist universe located in the Middle East, and if it comes to that, they will do it simply to protect themselves. It's just a damn shame to me that this can't be resolved utilizing love for your fellow man, etc., etc. But I gotta tell you, I really don't think that it can. Jimmy, you're watching the clock. You know we've only got about a minute left. Give us an opinion on that.
So there are the idealistic view of the world is fantastic. And we in America have lived under a very stable system for a long period of time. So we look at the world in a very different way. And the academics that are making decisions right now don't have real world experience. There is dark out there. There is evil out there. There are people that use individuals in order to gain power.
You bet.
There are that manipulate. And we're seeing it. We're seeing it on a massive scale that the reality is much different than the ideological hope of goodwill. It takes a strong leader, a strong understanding to push back against those types of violent and evil actions in order to protect the innocent, in order to protect our interests in the long run. And I think we're going to, hopefully people are going to wake up and see it, and that's what it's going to take. It's going to take political will to make hard decisions and challenging times against dark.
Unfortunately, evil is in the eye of the beholder, and that's something that we have to understand. What I want to say is, Robbie and Jimmy, obviously, I certainly appreciate your opinions. This show has been a lot of fun to get to put together. We'll be back next week.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.